Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline and I can't ride or wait to get started with this episode. Joining me is author and the high priestess of my living room, Jen Canny.
Oh my god.
I wrote that on the fly while we were eating.
That's extraordinary. And she made the most wonderful dumplings. They were... Well, they've been in the
defrosted
for a while,
them myself.
But they were still delicious.
Sometimes on this podcast, I try to be very tactical about the fact that the guest is on because they're promoting something. And I am not going to bother today because you, Jen Canny, are one of my best friends in the world. You, one of the very key things that cements our friendship is that we both got into tarot at around the same time back in 2015. And we both went different sort of directions with it. Yes. I started using it in fiction and you started, you know, interviewing authors on stage with it as part of literature with lovely Fiona Lensveld. And that has finally culminated in a book called Wildcard.
It has. It's a book. It's out there. It is sort of the introduction to tarot for people who aren't sure whether or not they're really into tarot or whether they could be. So...
Which is just so many people.
So many people have that kind of thing of, I'm a bit curious about it, but I have to be the seventh daughter of a seventh daughter or a psychic in order to do it. And this is a book that says, no, anyone can read the tarot. Everyone can. Everyone should if they want to. And I hope provides a sort of gentle, warm, loving, and also sometimes slightly silly intro to a very bizarre and wide-ranging world of cards.
It really is. I think this is like the natural extension of the girls who have maybe the CoStar app or whatever, you know, or girls who are like into crystals and half they're like, oh, I just like it and they're nice paperweights and half of it is like, maybe my destiny will change if I hold my rose quartz. And I have a lot of time for those girls. And, you know, they're...
Well, I mean, maybe I'm one of those girls.
Slash am one of those girls. So what we decided that we do today is it's the 100th episode of Sentimental Garbage.
Centenary edition.
The centenary garbage.
And we thought we'd just get the whole garbage can out.
Yeah, we thought we'd get loose. You'd come over. We've drank a bottle of something fizzy. And I would essentially kill two birds with one stone. The first bird that I'm killing with the stone is you are my dear friend and I want to promote something for your lovely book, which I think is fabulous. And the second thing is that there are so many things that people have asked me to cover that for some reason or another I haven't covered. And I've put all of those things, plus some other things I've just thought of at the top of my head, into a garbage bag. And we are going to take them out at random, talk about them.
Like a garbage tombola.
A garbage tombola. And we're going to pull cards to determine the future or the present of that thing.
We absolutely are going to do that. And I'm so excited because I put some things in there too. And I think yours are probably really good and mine are probably really mad because I crowdsourced them with my colleagues.
I'm wondering, like, should we just go for it? Like, do we want to describe the tower first or do we want to trust that most people who are listening get it?
Look, I think we're going to trust because you've written a book about tarot. Tarot is quite well known. If you're still not sure, there's a really fantastic guide to the tarot called Wildcard by Jen Canny and Fiona Lensveld, and you could read it. But we're going to show rather than tell. We're going to explore the delights of the tarot in the most playful and silly way.
Do you want to rattle the bag?
Oh my god!
Rattling the bag.
Are you picking our first piece of garbage out?
Okay, because you're going to read it, so I'm going to pick it.
You're going to pick the garbage. Okay. What's in there? Okay. What's in there?
One of mine.
Is it a strong start?
It's a really strong start.
Okay. What is it?
Charcuterie. The item is charcuterie. So ham and cheese on boards.
A thing I absolutely love, and I don't understand how anyone would have anything bad to say about it. Let's pick a card.
So yeah, while you're shuffling, I put charcuterie into the bag because I feel like charcuterie over the last few years has evolved from being a thing that's sort of like, is sort of a French delicacy of like, oh, okay, you're in a place and it, you know, they'll put some ham on the board for you because they do ham here. It's become this ultra femme meal.
Yes. It's like, we're not really eating anything. But also, we are eating possibly a, frankly, mostly raw animal. Like, it's kind of goth because they haven't cooked that. They salted it and they've hung it from a ceiling for a while, like a bat, but...
And it's like the sort of like, you got the ham on the board, you got the cheese on the board, you got little pickles and onions and courgettes and all kind of stuff. Yeah. It feels like every year I'm alive, the practice of charcuterie evolves again.
It does, and becomes more expensive.
More expensive.
Sometimes I look at that. I actually, it's not charcuterie, but oh my God, I think I checked it was in charcuterie there. I had a single asparagus that I paid £8 for recently
on a board.
And I was looking at it thinking, it's one blade of asparagus.
Mate, this is adjacent to charcuterie, but like, I don't know how much more I can take of sharing meals.
I feel like you've spoken about this before, and I agree with you, because I just want more food for my money, frankly. I want some chips, and I want some bread, and I want...
Yeah.
I don't want to feel as though I'm, like a vulture fighting over the entrails of an antelope in the middle of the...
And yet we as women seem to be stuck in this pattern.
Yeah.
Of like, you know that arm movement you make when you're a woman ordering food? Of like, just
the round table.
Just for the table.
Bring it whenever it comes. Bring it whenever it comes. And everyone is sort of, it's like picky bits, but you...
Picky bits.
But you paid 10 times as much for your picky bits. And as you say, look, everyone knows no one is satisfied by charcuterie. And yet, somehow, there comes a point in the evening and we order it.
And we order it.
You and I have had many boards in our lives.
Oh, we've...
We've made our own charcuterie boards.
We've checked the boards. Okay.
What is the future of charcuterie according to the tarot?
It's the Three of Pentacles.
Oh my God.
Interpret the Three of Pentacles. Tell our audience a little bit about pentacles, a little bit about threes, and what it means for charcuterie.
I love that we didn't road test this concept before we did it.
We did not road test this concept before we did it.
Okay, so the Three of Pentacles. Pentacles are the suit of basically the body, the earth suit of the tarot. They are the things that are real, that are manifest. It's about health, about finances, about home. Definitely meat platters would live in the suit of things that are real because they are not imagined and they are not feelings. And the Three of Pentacles is all about basically cooperation and working together and teamwork.
You're dead right.
I'm going to be absolutely honest. I don't think it's about the future of charcuterie. I think it's just a really good description of how you eat a charcuterie. Because you can't eat one alone, can you? The tarot has... you just like, don't slam the table in this manner. this essentially is... Yeah, you can't build a cathedral on your own. You certainly can't eat a whole charcuterie board on your own, and you really shouldn't. So I don't think the tarot is offering any real great insight about the future of charcuterie.
Merely a descriptor of what charcuterie is.
I feel a little bit like it's a lovely test where we're like, tarot, are you listening? What are we talking about? And it's like, charcuterie boards.
It is that first command on the Ouija board, isn't it? Of like, are you listening? Knock, knock. Yes, it is.
Yes, I am. This is all about a group project that you do together. And that, for me, is a delicious...
No man is an island and no woman can order charcuterie alone.
Can you imagine how perverse it would be if you went to a restaurant on your own and then you ordered a charcuterie board? You'd be hounded out of there. You'd be a pervert. I would hate it.
Hi, Gav.
You're recording things, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
I can't make a fucking move in this house without
being recorded. No, you can't.
I live in
a
surveillance state. I'm just coming home to my beautiful home. Hello, you beautiful girls.
Hi, baby.
How are you doing? It's so good to see you.
This is a very nice vibe in this room.
I know, it's a lovely vibe.
It's the coziest vibe in London.
It is.
Great.
Yeah.
Did I walk in on a good bit?
No, we had a right little pause.
It was a nice pause. You look nice, though.
You do look nice.
Thank you.
All right, let's go next one in the bag.
What's next in the bag? Next in the bag for us.
Your turn.
I'm going to shuffle around. Oh, it was one of mine.
Oh, shit.
Pajamas.
Yeah.
That are nice.
Pajamas that are nice.
I think this is a thing that is I'll put it in here because I think it's deeply underrated. I think it's a thing that really only women get to do, as I say. My greatest pyjamas are pyjamas that you, my dear friend, mm-hmm. have gifted me. And I wear them with such pleasure. There's nothing I like more than getting into a silky pyjama, a green and white stripe with leopards on, and wearing it around the house. And I just think people don't give enough credit to a nice pyjama.
Yeah, I feel like for you and I, I'm glad that you brought this up because I think it's becoming almost awkward. Because it's like, I remember sort of me saying, I love a nice pyjama. And you being like, I feel like all my pyjamas are just sort of sweatpants and t-shirts in different combinations. And me being like, I'll remedy that. And that was 5 years ago.
And now I have so many
pyjamas. But now, exactly. Now every time you like dog sit my dog or like it's your birthday or something, I buy you another pair of pyjamas. It feels like the weird aunt who just keeps getting you cactuses or something.
I treasure every single pyjama. And also I quite often get compliments. Not that people see me in my pyjamas on a daily basis, mm-hmm. but you know when you like travel or occasionally if you don't bother to dress for a work Zoom call, people are like, what's that great thing? And I go, a lovely pyjama that Caroline's got me. But what I want to know is, what is the future?
What's the future for pyjamas that are nice?
Let's find out. Am I pulling a card now?
Yeah, because I pulled the last one.
It's this one.
Okay.
The Emperor.
The Emperor.
Men are going to get into nice silken pyjamas.
Thank God.
Because I'm so sick of their little ratty boxers and their horrible old t-shirts. All right,
okay. I have so much to say on this.
Okay. It's time, finally, for men to enjoy a delicious, soft, beautiful pyjama. Tell me what your thoughts are.
The thing is, as you know, I've been living with a man for a very long time. Those people...
What is wrong with him?
Those people will relax in jeans.
Oh! A hard trouser? How they will do it?
They will come home from a long day in a hard trouser and continue being in the hard trouser until they fall asleep in what they're wearing, or they just shed their clothes and sweat in their beds.
No! I think both of those are awful. There's nothing... I disgust myself on the few occasions that I come home a bit too merry to change into a pyjama.
Yeah.
And I wake up. It's not that I've woken up on my sofa that's the problem. It's the fact that I'm still wearing work clothes.
I know. And you feel your knickers up in weird places.
Oh, and there's a bra. But equally, as you say, even worse than that, not being able to find your pyjamas and going to bed naked like a horrible dolphin that's slipped in.
Horrible. It's like a horrible dolphin.
I'm just like, oh God. Oh, it's disgusting. Pyjamas are necessary. Just, you know, the Emperor is the card essentially of the patriarchy. It's sort of a card of safe spaces. It's a card of masculinity. Yeah. Men.
Men are going to finally get into pyjamas.
Nice pyjamas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I do feel like, I have broached this to Gav on a few like Christmases and birthdays or whatever, you know, when you're in that sort of 3 week period beforehand when you're fishing. For
things.
And being like, would you not have a lovely pair of pyjamas? And him being like, no, don't want it. Like he will quarter a nice soft pair of sweatpants kind of thing.
Not the same, you can't sleep in that.
Because even sweatpants, they have an implicit sort of testosterone thing in the name. You sweat in your pants.
Yeah. I'm sweating in my pants, that's not a good thing for my bed experience.
Right? But like, okay, so like if men are so resistant to a nice pyjama, because there's something effeminate and weird, like wee willy winky, the kind of the whole vibe.
Yeah.
It's like wearing a little suit to bed with a pocket. Like it's weird.
What's
it's effeminate.
What's the pocket for? What are we supposed to put?
What are we putting in there? I don't know. It's like fussy and like, you know, obviously masculinity is supposed to be the opposite of fussiness. Yeah. Who is the male celebrity or male sort of movement that is going to get men into jammies?
I don't know, but I'm so excited to find out.
Because I do remember years ago, Scrubs ushered in the male onesie. Remember that?
Yes!
That was Scrubs was responsible for the onesie.
Oh my God, I had not realised that. And
and
now men embrace it. They still do it in that kind of kooky, like, oh my God, I'm wearing a onesie thing.
Yeah,
rather
like
than just
cheap stag night out kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, look at me, I'm dressed as a raccoon. But
Yeah. But an indulgent, nice pyjama.
Who would be the man who could do it? The obvious choice is someone like a Timothy Chalamet. I think if he started...
But here's the thing.
Harry Styles, I think, could make a pyjama happen.
Here's the thing, Jen. You've become very distant to the male planet.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. I do
because
live on my own.
Women care about Timothy Chalamet and women care about Harry Styles. But
you're
men don't give
a
fuck. Men care about, like, Ryan Reynolds.
Who even is he? I find his teeth alarming, but...
Or, like, who else do men care about? They care about Kendrick Lamar.
Okay, so Kendrick Lamar slips into a beautiful leopard print set and puts it on his Instagram.
Yeah.
The age of the drama is upon us.
Yeah, and then I feel like... Because, like, yeah, okay, so, all right. Let's say someone in, like, who's cool in, like, rap culture gets into, like, here's my lovely pair of pajamas. Because rappers are really good at indulging in nice things.
Yes.
Then we need a filter moment. Like, a H&M conscious moment.
Okay.
Or Carhartt. That's what it is.
Carhartt pajamas! They're, like, overalls, but they're comfortable.
We need Carhartt.
Okay, so, Carhartt, if you're listening, it's time to go into men's pajamas. And when you do that, we're here to help.
We're here to help.
Because I feel it's going to be one of those, like, skips generation things. Because I think, like, my granddad absolutely loves a pajama.
My granddad had a pajama as well, a silky pajama.
But our parents' generation...
No pajama.
They're either just... I mean, they're mostly nude, I think.
Yeah, I think my dad sleeps in his underwear, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to think about it, but I'm pretty sure that's where it goes. And then but it's time for this generation to circle back and to understand sleepwear is...
Men. Bring back the pajama.
Okay. I love this.
I love that. That was a very good card for the future of the pajama.
Man, pajama. Okay. Who's next in our bag of garbage?
I love the bag of garbage.
Pick your garbage. Okay, what's in there?
Oh, it's one of yours.
Okay. Could be good. Could be bad. We'll find out.
Okay. A political one.
What?
Snapchat/Instagram filters.
Oh, so just for crucial context here, I didn't mean the ones that make you beautiful. I meant the ones that make you look like a little dog.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a thing that I personally have never used.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always really kind of curious about it because why?
No, I do.
And this
feel
is the question
you.
I'd want to ask the tarot is like, why put a dog nose and ears on?
Yeah.
Have you ever done it?
No, I haven't, but I have noticed, like, people who, like, I, like really respect, like, getting on stories, and they're, like, explaining some shit, and they're being, like, here's the reason why this bill that's recently been passed is actually really unfair, and isn't why it seems like, and they have
literally... But they're like a little mouse.
Fucking dog ears on.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on?
What's going on with that? Like,
My theory, I think, my best I can guess is that, like... Those filters were among the first kind of like pretty blurry filters that you could still have on while you were talking and they would kind of move.
I do think they are the grandmothers of the beauty filters.
Yeah, they are.
Like now you can put a thing on and it makes your face... Actually, it makes my face look really weird, I'll be honest. I've never seen one of those filters that works very well.
But yeah.
They were the first ones which could...
I can see why
out.
They're giving the young women brain damage. Like, I can
absolutely
totally see why.
But they make your eyes bigger and your lips bigger and... Someone who's got
your nose thinner and your eyes brighter, like I think the iris is brighter. Like, it's a weird vibe.
As someone who's been genetically blessed with already quite creepy golem eyes and quite a big mouth, it's not a good look for me. I like a brat's doll, but I've tried it.
That's the look. That's what you're supposed to be aiming for.
It's unnerving.
All right, okay.
Okay, what was the future? And what's the reason? What's going on here?
Okay, it's the High Priestess.
Oh, are we? Wow.
Okay. Interpret that for
the High Priestess, I suppose, is a lot about like the divine feminine and about kind of intuition and about mysteries and about accessing the magic within. It's not actually about the external world. It's about the inside and what's happening in the subconscious, your inner self, kind of going behind the veil. And I don't know, I suppose if I were going to interpret this, and this is, I suppose, a generous interpretation, and maybe I'm going to... Weirdly, seeing this card makes me feel a bit better about the little dog filters. Because in some ways, the dog filter, we've just talked about it being about beauty and almost being about a vanity thing and wanting your skin to be better and your face to be smoother. But is it almost about sort of disguising the physical self? And when you want to talk about these issues, you actually allow the inner self to come out because you look like a little dog and that's obviously not you, but you're not being judged for the way you look because everybody looks like a tiny little dog with dog ears and dog eyes and dog nose. Is that a profound insight or have I had too much wine? I'm not too sure.
I think there's something here.
There's something here around, like, I think a lot of this political or the kind of the discourse around filters is it's somehow catfishing or it's lying. Yeah. And actually... You can see it when it's there. Like, it's really obvious when someone has a filter on their face. And obviously the cat and dog filters even more, obviously. And it's almost a little bit of a way of wearing a mask and speaking truth. And that's sort of like almost dramatic tradition of, I'm allowed to put my face out there because it's not really my face. And I can speak from behind this very silly face.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Because there's this thing of like, I've always maintained that like, the happiest celebrities are the ones who are able to create a hologram of themselves.
Yes.
And the hologram, they're able to, like, when they're really good at it, like someone like a Dolly Parton, right? Mm. Who's like so perfect at, so great celebrity, or The Rock, right?
Yeah.
They're able, the perfect hologram of themselves, they're almost able to point over their shoulder using a laser pointer.
Yes.
While the rest of them lives their real life and yeah. the hologram does the work. And is the dog filter the version of like, hey, we all know this isn't real. We all know this isn't what I look like. I'm wearing dog ears, so you know that I know that I know that. Here's the thing I want to talk about.
Totally. It's almost like it like sort of lifts off that outer skin and that glamour and puts it forward and allows you to disconnect with what's true and real behind it without being distracted by the face in front
yeah,
of you.
Yeah, this is deep.
God, we've gone really deep now.
This is like a Medium article.
How the little Snapchat dog filters help you access your true inner self.
Yeah, maybe they do.
I mean, the thing is, I've never put one on, and maybe that's what I'm missing out on.
Maybe you're afraid.
I've never done a story with my face in it, because I think yeah. I wouldn't really want to look at my big gurning face coming back at me. And so maybe putting a dog face on would make me feel happier, because I'd be like, obviously that's not.
I do sometimes do the old to camera thing, and the filter I put on, my go-to filter, is the sort of it's like a vintagey camera thing.
Ooh,
where it's
okay.
like the there's like numbers running that like
yeah.
look as if it's like a home video from the 70s. And I literally, I've only just realized when I put that on, it's like, first of all, I want my face to look blurry and nice, mm. and I don't want strangers to see that I've got like acne scars or bags on my eyes or weird hair that day or whatever. But I also want them to know that I know that I have a filter on.
Yes, and that you are, there is a certain level of, I don't want to say performance,
distance,
but distance.
Yeah.
This is my public self. The private self sits behind it. A separation of
oh my God.
That was a real...
That's a real thinker.
I think when that came out of the bag, I was like, I don't know what we're going to say about this, but...
Oh my God, all right.
The terror is actually delivered for us there. Okay.
Yeah, well, we have proper, like, galaxy brain tonight as well, don't we? We're, like,
I love that.
We're elevating.
Okay, I've got another one.
Okay.
It's yours or mine. Oh, God, I put loads in there. Prosecco.
Prosecco.
Come on.
Okay.
There are so many fridge magnets about Prosecco. It's like, it's a thing. It's more than just a drink. It's a culture.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
And people get weird about it. They're like, oh, I won't drink Prosecco. I'm going to drink Cremant now because somehow Prosecco.
Or Cava. Cava has become the chic one, right?
Yeah. Prosecco's got this sort of like loaded, freighted cultural context. And it is just sparkling wine. Let's
yeah.
be honest, from Italy.
And we had a bottle of it tonight.
We did. And, you know, this episode is sponsored by the bottle of Prosecco.
It's just been hanging around in my living room for the last 2 weeks. But you're right. Yeah. And I remember when you and I have been friends for like 10, 11 years. And when we first met, when we were working in advertising, the Prosecco was everywhere.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Every kind of celebration
yeah.
was marked by Prosecco.
Yeah.
And then it did like veer into birthday cards and meme territory.
Yeah, and it was always that kind of like looping gold calligraphy font.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it's become... And it's
very bridesmaids vibes.
Very bridesmaids vibes. And a lot of bad press about it. Like there was like the Prosecco smile where people apparently were like losing their gums because Prosecco was so sugary. I remember one of those horrible scare yeah. articles. Prosecco smiles. You've had so much Prosecco that your teeth change.
Yeah. But it's so interesting when, like, a drink that was previously very neutral. Like, I feel like
yeah.
nobody... Like, I remember in that ad agency we used to work at, one of the boasts that they had, one of the old heads had, was that they made gin and tonic a young person's drink.
Ugh, as if they did that.
As if... first of all, as if they did that. But also, you kind of do forget that, like, drinks do have their seasons,
totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Pimm's for a while was very old Britain, very uncool, and then it kind of became cool
yes.
again, you know?
And Prosecco's had its moment, but Prosecco, I'm going to assume, without knowing any of the history of it, has probably been around for quite some time now. I
yeah.
guess a few hundred years.
It's just Italian sparkling wine.
That's all it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite
and
sweet.
yet Cava has the sort of chic thing. Like, I had that experience recently where I was going to a dinner at a friend's house, and I went to this sort of like the corner shop off license that was near them, and it only had Prosecco. And I was like, I'm not going to buy that. And then I went like the next one, only
yeah.
Prosecco. And then I went to the next one just to
yeah.
get Cava because it has a classier overtone.
There's some different, if there's a different feel to it.
Yeah.
And The absolute honest truth is I probably couldn't taste the difference between the two.
Nope.
But you'll have a certain association with it. And I think Prosecco, weirdly, has been tarnished.
It has been tarnished. And it's fine.
It's not just fine. It's very nice. We just had
a nice bottle. Yeah.
What's the future of it?
The future? Let's draw a card.
The devil.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I like this for the Prosecco because the devil is a card that the tarot... Also, can you just... Take a moment for how great this particular iteration of the devil is.
Oh, she's got a full bush and hairy legs.
Fantastic.
I love her. Big bush.
Love it. So the devil is a card that's about, basically about being trapped. It's not about Satan. It's not about devil worship. It's a card about feeling trapped in a situation, often in patterns or often in sort of loops beyond your control. And it can speak to some of the biggest things in life. It can speak to things like addiction or being trapped in toxic relationships. It can also speak to very small things, you know, like constantly being in your overdraft or like having to have 6 cups of coffee to function. And I feel a little bit like one of the things people don't always realize about the tarot is that there's no card that's good or completely bad. They all have shadow and light sides. And the dark side of the devil are quite apparent. It is a manifestation of difficult things in your life, but there's a real gift in it. And in most versions of the tarot, you'll see kind of people who are chained at a devil's feet, but the chains around their necks are really loose. Like they have the ability if they want to.
They always hang on the ground a bit.
Yeah, they're sort of a little bit like almost complicit in their own entrapment. And there's this sense of, you keep on saying, oh, I can't help it. It's just the way it is. Things are like this. But actually, if you wanted to change, you could. And in this metaphor, I like to think of Prosecco as having been trapped in its own bad marketing and its own kind of cultural connotations. And I like this idea of maybe it throwing off its chains, throwing off those kind
it's
of...
It's a perfectly nice drink.
Just being like, fuck you guys, I'm actually a very good Italian sparkling wine. And I'm always going to like own the fact that I've been a little bit used and abused by the gift birthday card industry and balloons. And actually kind of, I think maybe find itself again.
Oh!
I think Prosecco's got a bright future.
Love that for her.
I think give it 10 years and we'll be thinking Prosecco. It'll be chic again. Maybe not just, I think, I don't want it to be...
I love this trend forecasting hour. It's fabulous.
Not like chic in the sense of it's going to be in the magazines. I think it will just become a drink that hasn't got that kind of baggage attached to it. I want Prosecco to shake off its chains.
Yeah.
Just live in itself.
The way that like, you know, red or white wine doesn't have a baggage attached to it, right?
Totally.
This is just trend forecasting. I love it.
I absolutely love it. What's next?
What's next?
Garbage bag.
Oh my God, this one's very cute.
Oh, what is it? Our friendship? Question mark?
Our friendship? Question mark?
Explain. Are we trash culture? Are we sentimental garbage?
Yeah,
we are
sentimental, and I've just been friends with you a long time. I thought it'd be sweet if I was just like, what's next for us? You're truly one of my my dearest and least problematic bonds.
Oh my God!
It's just like it requires so little gardening, and it produces so much fruit.
We are like a lovely wild garden. You know, it's naturally pollinated by the bees of our occasional text messages, walks in the woods, and then newt holidays.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh my God, our friendship. Okay. We're going to pull it for it.
What's next for our friendship?
What's next for our friendship? Specifically, Jen and Caroline. I hope it's a good one.
7 of Cups?
7 of Cups?
Don't love that for her.
I don't dislike that for us, actually.
So explain 7 of Cups to the listeners.
So in the tarot, the cups are all about emotions. They're all about the heart. They're about feelings. They can talk about creative energy. They can talk about relationships. They can talk about different types of love. So you find all sorts of things in the cups. And the 7 is kind of card of imagination and fantasy and of having lots of different directions that things can go in and having that sense of like, there are all these possibilities. Where do I want it to go? I don't hate this for us, to be honest, because I always feel like our friendship, as you've just said, it is a wild garden. It's quite organic. You know, it hasn't ever been like, oh, we're going to make it be like this. We don't have a regimented. We've never been people to have like an appointment, standing appointment, brunch or dinner or anything. We've always just sort of allowed this friendship to flourish quite naturally and to sort of have its moments where it's really in bloom and have its moments where it's sort of in the sort of hibernation phases because they're both very busy. Yeah. But I feel like what I like about the Seven of Cups for our friendship is that sense of what do we want it to be? And actually kind of having a moment of thinking, like, where do we want to go? Is there something we could do when we've been doing tarot together? Is something we can do more together? Do we want to go and do something? Do we want to finally go to Norway, like we keep on talking about?
Oh, and then God, we were going to go to Norway.
We weren't, it didn't happen.
Like, I would say this to the listeners as well, is that, like, I do think that this is a conversation I often have with Gavin about stag do's versus hen do's.
Yeah.
And why do I despise every hen do I've ever been invited to?
So much.
And why does he, like, look forward quite pleasantly to every stag do he's ever been on? And what I always tell him is that, like, because women on the daily hold each other to very high standards of friendship. And I love that about us because we show up for each other in big ways. But we also expect a lot from each other sometimes as well. And, like, it's beautiful and it's very fecund, but I think can also put a lot of pressure on people.
Mm.
And I do think lots of women fight very hard to make their friendships look or feel a certain way.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, like, you didn't show up for me. You didn't weren't there for me on this and that kind of thing. And there's a lot of fear in female friendships sometimes that if you let someone go or if you kind of forget to get someone a birthday present that year or don't show up for whatever, this or that or the other, that you've somehow eaten into this bank account of goodwill and you'll never get it back, or you need to do something really huge to get it back, like send her flowers or something, when really all, like, long good friendships just exist in this natural ebb and flow that if it's a real thing doesn't need to be conditioned quite as much as you think it should be.
It's resilient and it's got the strength to survive different moments and different experiences.
I do think there's a huge amount of anxiety with women and their friends, much more than women and their relationships.
Completely but I think we're very lucky in that. I also would like to pull out, because I just spotted it looking at this card, that famously within the Seven of Cups there's a cup which has snakes in it. And, and one of the things that we often talk about, a lovely metaphor.
Talk about the code.
It's a beautiful code. So I particularly definitely get quite depressed and quite anxious at times and go a bit off the radar. And I find it very hard to tell people about it when it's happening, including my beloved friends like Caroline. And the way I describe it is as though I have a handbag full of snakes and I can't tell anybody about the snakes in the handbag because then they'll panic. Mm. And then I'll panic because I'll be like, shit, my handbag is full of snakes. And I told you about this. And certainly during the pandemic, my handbag was chock full of vipers. Like, it was a seething pit of snakes. And you made this beautiful friendship code that you sent to me on WhatsApp. And it was just like, how many snakes are in your handbag? Is it one snake? Just send me an emoji. Is it two snakes? You're doing okay, but maybe I should check in on you. Is it three snakes? I'm going to start calling the police.
There was also a flower scale.
There was a flower scale. I focused on snakes. There was butterflies, actually. Butterflies. I'm actually fine. But the idea that I'd be like, I'm absolutely totally fine sending you three butterflies, I just can't be asked to reply to your text, would probably be wrong. You put it in there for symmetry, but it was truly all about the snakes. And this card to me speaks of the fact that there can be great joy. There's rainbows in it. There's, like, a lovely tiny lady. There's a weird ghost. But also sometimes there are snakes. And I like the fact that our friendship, there will be snakes in handbags in future. And we will both know how to respect the fact that the other is having a bad time.
Having a bad snake time.
And be there. And use the WhatsApp code before I send some snakes, which I don't do very well. But you have snakes. Okay. I have snakes. Anyway,
guys,
if you're ever thinking about a lovely metaphor for feeling depressed, is your handbag full of snakes? Just tell your friends that. It's easier sometimes.
Tell
your friends.
And also, like, if you have a friend who's handbag snake prone,
create a WhatsApp code.
Develop a code. Yeah. Just don't sit around bitching that they're being uncommunicative or whatever, because that doesn't help.
Maybe they're having a snaky time.
Maybe they're having a snake time.
Sometimes we are. Okay. Yeah.
Next one.
Next up. Is it my turn?
Right. Yeah.
Having a lovely time going through all this. Two stuck together.
Oh.
Should I take them both out?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
See if they work together. Sorry. I'm going to see what the remix here is. Okay, this is fantastic. Okay. I'm so glad they were stuck together because I feel this is significant. Julia Stiles and Chris Rock.
Oh my God.
What if it turns out that they're, like, in love?
What if it turns out they're in love?
Or they hate one another very much and they're trapped in a long mutual enmity.
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't know, but the fact that they were stuck together in this garbage bag feels very significant to me. Feels like the universe is trying to tell us something. I know nothing about what their current lives are like. I only know them from Kelly.
Yeah, I think Julia Stiles, right. I mean, I think she's fresh in my brain because we did a Save the Last Dance episode recently.
Wonderful.
And I've been thinking about her a lot in the sense that, like, she really ruled over the early noughties, like 10 Things I Hate About You and Save the Last Dance and stuff. And she was really this sort of...
The Prince and Me, did she do that?
The Prince and Me. Oh, my God.
Was that one?
That lovely brown bob of hers. Yeah.
Oh, she was so cute.
I was so happy with the print when she did The Prince and Me because she finally found a haircut for her face shape.
She's such a beautiful woman.
But
she
has
so many bad hair.
She has had not had hair. Like, there are so many women. So many women I know that I think of, like, why are you hanging on to that long hair for? Your face doesn't suit it.
Am I one of those women?
You're not one of those women. You've had hair of many lengths and you're beautiful at every length.
Just checking.
But there are women that I know socially that I'm a bit like, you're holding on to a lot of stringy hair. And I think you need to let go because you'd look lovely with a little bob.
Yes, yes. I think some people are afraid that it's somehow like less
feminine.
Or less sexy. And actually, I definitely have had moments in my life where, particularly as a tarot reader, my hair's got very long. And I've been like, I think I now have passed into witch territory and I have to be very careful of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, you've got to find the right hair for your face.
I'm in a hair experimentation phase moment where I'm letting it grow really long.
Interesting.
But it looks a bit like Garth from Wayne's World, so quite yellow and dry.
No! Have you considered hair oil? It's magical.
I might have to, I put Julia Stiles in there because of that. And I put Chris Rock in there because of, you know, the Will Smith stuff happened quite recently, so he's in my brain. But maybe she's due a comeback because she's a woman of a certain age, and he's due a comeback because he's disgraced himself. No, he's not disgraced himself. Has he? Arguably. He made an off-color joke about Jada Pinkett Smith. And then Will Smith slapped him. And it was a very funny day on the internet.
It was so funny day on the internet. But it wasn't a very funny joke. That's the thing.
No, it was a bad joke.
I remember watching it and going, oh, you really put yourself in the line of fire for something that was...
Not worth it.
Not worth it. And also, quite hard to... I think a lot of the news outlets had to explain the joke because it wasn't self-evident.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to them, though? I wonder if the tarot knows.
The two... Julia Stiles and Chris Rock are going to work on something together.
Okay. What's it going to be?
What's it going to be?
Am I putting the card?
Yes, you are.
I'm putting this card. They're going to work together on the Four of Pentacles.
Okay.
So what's interesting about this card,
which
is not very much, if I'm really honest.
A lot of Pentacles are done, so let's just say it.
The Four of Pentacles is a very slow card. It's very much like a kind of stable table card. It's sort of that thing of sitting in a place that's safe and not pushing any boundaries and not being out there and not... like trying something new. And maybe what this says is that, I mean, I don't know what Julia Stiles has been up to, but I'm going to guess from the fact that I've not heard of her for a while, apart from one now TV
drama. She was in Dexter.
Brilliant. Is that I think she's found her niche, and I think she's probably living a very fulfilled and happy life.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever her life is, I do not know. And it's out of the media gaze, and she's not sort of raising her head above the parapet. And maybe this is just to say that Chris Rock should take a fucking leaf from Julia Stiles' book and just stay in his lane.
Just get a stable TV job.
Just get like a job.
On a CBS crime drama.
Oh my God, just like do that. Like just be commissioned.
Be a wisecracking detective.
By HBO, which is scripted, so you can't say anything offensive about anybody's partners and cause drama anywhere. I think he needs more Four of Pentacles. I think Julia Stiles has probably
Stay
got
in
it.
Your lane, Chris.
Stay in your lane.
Wind it down.
Wind it down. And Julia, just keep doing what you're doing.
Keep doing your thing.
And just real contrast there between
How immense would it be if there was like suddenly like a Deadline article that was like, Julia Stiles and Chris Rock team up. Save the Last Dance 2.
Oh my God. All for like a very just tame sounding drama.
I would love it if it's like, this time it's about a ballerina who learns stand-up comedy.
Okay, I would watch it.
She brings the finesse of her ballet training to the rough world of stand-up comedy.
I would watch that.
No, you would. couldn't.
I would watch anything that sounded that weird.
You would watch anything.
Look, I've got no taste. I'm famous for my lack of taste.
All the most intellectual people I know have shit taste in TV, and I love that.
People always say things like, have you seen The Wire? I have not.
No.
Have you seen, what's that one, Succession? I have no idea what happens in
But have world. You seen all of Shadow and Bone? Yes, you have.
Have I watched every single episode of Grey's Anatomy, of which there are 18 seasons, 20 episodes per season?
Nuts.
Yes, some of them twice. And I love that for me, and I will not apologise for it.
I love it.
Thanks.
It shows that you're, like, challenged and exercised within your, like, daily life that you don't need.
I just think there's so much, like, and this is kind of very much at the heart of Sentimental Garbage. And of course, the last time I appeared on this beautiful podcast, we talked about SJ Mass.
Yeah.
Who probably isn't considered by many to be the epitome of great taste, but writes an incredibly good book.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Tightly plotted, horny AF, lots of fairy tale in there. Absolutely love it. And I will not be ashamed of reading every single one of those 800 page horny fairy books.
I wish she was in here, but she isn't.
Oh my god, I would so love to read Sarah J. Maas. I would love to read her tarot.
Big cries in public. Big cries in public / with pals.
I
love crying, man. As listeners of this podcast will know, I love to cry.
It's just, I think it's a very important skill to have.
Yeah.
To be able to have, but also to not just keep your cries to, like, the dark hours of the night when no one can see you. Just to acknowledge that you have feelings.
Yeah. And you have to cry a lot.
This one went in today because I was at work and I was asking people around my desk, being like, what are kind of, I was like, particularly elements of things that women do or kind of female culture, I was asking the men, that you find, like, you don't really understand or you don't really get. And the guy sitting opposite me, he just went, emotions. And I was like, what?
Emotions.
I was like, well, do you have emotions? Like, yeah, but, like, showing them. And I sort of dug a bit deeper and he was like, crying a lot in public. And he was kind of like, I think sometimes people are a bit alarmed by the fact that particularly women do it. I do it a lot. I think it's very healthy to get your cries out.
Yeah.
When was the last time you had a big cry?
Oh,
a really good one. So, a real proper, like.
Oh. I do think there's a slight grading on the curve situation here because, again, as listeners to this podcast will go, my favorite kind of crying to do, and the crying I do most often, is I get very moved by things.
Mm-hmm.
And I get, when things are really good, and when everyone has, like, tried their best at a piece of art, and, like, it has moved me, like, it is nothing that sends me over the edge more. And I, like, it can be embarrassing. Like, Gavin said to me once, he was like, I remember when I first saw you do that, I was like, oh my god, I'm with this, like, deep woman who's, like, really moved by things or whatever. And he was like, no, I really resented about you because, like, you reduce the person you're with to the level of carer just because you become so instantly raw.
It's a double-edged sword. Right.
And I can see him, like, we went to, like, a museum exhibit the other day and I started bawling, and, like, I've got to this point now where, like, I try not to draw attention to it, kind of thing. And I can see him like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, and what's that about? Because what a beautiful thing to just be able, no one shames you for laughing in public.
But the thing is, I do get it, where it's, like, that thing of, like, the person is being visibly more affected than you are, so they're kind of, you know when someone's, like, taking up all the air in the room with their emotions.
Yes.
Like, imagine if I told you about something terrible that had happened to me and then you got more upset than I was, and then I'd be a bit like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I do get it.
Yeah, no, that is fair. But I still think on balance.
Let me cry.
A big cry can be really, just like, just sharing emotion, having a lovely cry with your friends. I just think it's a thing that,
yeah,
is such an important part of so many of my friendships, is the fact that once in a while, you just pop the cork and it can be like a tiny, tiny thing that set you off that's actually completely irrelevant, and you're having a lovely weep and you're like, it's not actually about that thing. It's I've just got so many things I actually have a lot of feelings about. Can we talk it through? And you're just allowed to talk it through.
And what's great about that is that when you have a friend who, like, cries fairly frequently, like, I've seen you cry a bunch of times, and it's, you know, doesn't alarm me anymore. No. It's like, she's gone through some stuff. She's letting out the pressure valve. But, like, I was with a friend the other day, and I've known her for a really long time, longer than I've known you, and she cried for the first time I've ever seen her cry.
Oh, wow.
And it was because she was just driven to the edge on a subject, and she just couldn't deal anymore, and she really needed help. But, like, it was funny because I didn't, I'm not asking her to be different or you to be different or anyone to be different, but it was like, because I didn't have the language of her crying, I was like, for about 5 minutes, I could just, all I could hear was alarm bells of being like, oh no, 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 yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I couldn't like be there for her in the moment for a few minutes because I was like, oh God, how do I, she's, I've never seen this.
Yeah,
you know?
What do I do with this?
Yeah.
This person is emoting in this way.
Whereas if you have a friend that cries very frequently, you're like, yeah, she's all right.
She's okay. She's just like, she's just got feelings leaking out of her eyes.
I don't think a cry is always a cry for help.
No, I definitely don't. Yeah. In fact, I feel like sometimes when I'm having a big cry, I had one quite recently actually, and I had a big cry. It was in public. And you know, when it sort of started, you just can't really rein it in and be like, I'm going to head home. I've had a lovely cry. And I was having a cry in my Uber home, just feeling my feeling, just staring out the window as though I was in some kind of drama. I'm just having like a gentle weep. And the poor Uber driver kept being like, are you okay, madam? Because obviously I'm older.
Madam.
Are you okay? And I was like, don't worry. I'm fine. I'm just feeling a lot of feelings. You don't need to be alarmed. I'm not okay. It's just a natural part of me processing some stuff. And he was clearly like, this woman, she's crazy. She's getting a 1-star rating.
Oh my God, you're like that Lord song, Liability.
I was a liability. And I got to let myself home. So I'm a little weep and I sat on my stairs and I had a bit more of a cry. Like a proper like, oh, really? And then I was like, okay, got it all out now. Put my nice pyjamas on.
Yeah.
Went to bed. Absolutely fine the next day.
The thing about crying.
It really, I was like, you just had the moment where you go, okay, done.
Done now.
I'm finished. I'm happy.
The thing about crying is that even when you're having your worst cry, you're always a little bit aware of the like photogenicness of your own crying.
Which is very poor on mine.
But you know what I mean? Like even the romantic drama of your own crying, you get a bit, like a part of you is a bit like, oh, I'm a woman in a film.
Have you ever, because I have on like one occasion made the mistake of glancing at myself in a mirror whilst having a big cry and then like agreed to never do that again.
Oh, you've never taken a few glassy-eyed selfies of you?
No!
Just before a cry?
No, I've never done that. But I think there's one occasion where I still remember it because I think I was having a big cry and I don't know, I think I just needed to like get something from the bathroom and I saw myself in the mirror and I was like, oh God, this is awful! Am I subjecting my friends to this? My horrible red face?
I don't think you're an ugly crier.
My sausage eyelids that were like swelled up.
Yeah, that's true. We are all getting to the age where we are sausaging up, aren't we?
Oh, it's very bad.
It's bad. Yeah, it was better when we were younger.
Yeah.
We were able to cry glassier, but you're right. I do notice that a puffing.
Oh, completely. Just like a full...
Yeah.
It's like...
There's a reason why you only see young women crying in public, right?
It's like labia for the eyes.
It is like a labia for the eyes. A big puffy, puffy puss.
It's quite squishy.
Oh my God, I know.
Sorry.
We have to stop. Awful.
But... Still, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's the reason you only see 22-year-olds crying in public.
Totally. Well,
they don't get big, vaggy eyes.
No.
So horrible. Image. Did we even pull a tarot card for this?
Should we quickly just
okay,
in case?
Yeah, and then we'll move on. Let's do two more.
The Nine of Cups.
I hate that card.
Why? You hate it because in the Rider Waite, it's this like very smug looking man.
Yeah, he looks like the kind of guy who says, I love eating pussy.
He really does.
Yeah,
he's got
it's
like a mantelpiece full of cuts. You're completely right.
Yeah.
But first of all, we're not reading from the Rider Waite. It's a woman. She's got her beret, a jaunty beret, I would say, as well.
Yeah, she looks a bit like No Face from Spirited Away.
She does. And she's got her legs open in a very, like, manspready way. But the Nine of Cups is a card that I refer to as the card of a woman in her prime.
Mm.
Like, when she just, like, feels herself, knows herself, is, like, living for the things that make her happy and not worrying about other people, which I think is pretty much what we have just talked about with crying.
Crying freely with your big, mad, vagina eyes.
I'm not being ashamed of your vaggy eyes. Just going, like, fine, I'm having a cry. What of it? Saying to your Uber driver, don't worry about me. I am not actually a liability. I'm going to go home and I'm going to be absolutely fine.
That's the thing. I haven't had, like, a big cry in public alone in a really long time.
Well, you just haven't lived on your own.
That's true. That's true.
I'll tell you what, it's much easier. When you haven't got a partner or housemate, a public cry solo is, I'll be honest, not just a common occurrence, but sometimes a bit of a treat. You'll be in a cafe and you're just like, you might edge on some sunglasses if you're a bit worried, and you'll just be like, okay, yeah, no, I'm just feeling my feeling.
I love that. I'm jealous.
A real insight into how I live my Saturdays.
Eating your enormous charcuterie and crying.
Alone.
It's beautiful. Okay,
what have we got?
Pubes.
It's pubes.
What's the future of pubes?
Okay.
Who is this?
It's the Queen of Pentacles.
Okay.
So
she keeps her own garden.
The Queen of Pentacles is the ultimate gardening card of the tarot.
Yeah, she's the gardener, yeah.
In Wildcard, we talk about her as sort of embodying that phrase that William Morris had, which is keep nothing in your house that you do not know to be useful
or find believe to be beautiful.
And I think that the Queen of Pentacles would find pubes to be both useful and beautiful. This is not the Marie Kondo card. She's like maximalist. She's kind of like, she's all about sensation. She's all about having nice things. You're allowed to have nice things. You're allowed to enjoy them. She's about touch. She's about physical kind of sensory experience. And I think she's probably quite pro-pube. I just don't think this card does not have a bush, unlike the devil. But if she did, I think it would be quite
A shaped full bush.
Yeah, but maybe with like some flowers plaited into it. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like I'm really out of touch with what pubes are doing right now en masse. Okay. Like, I feel like for a while everyone was talking about waxes and Brazilians and the landing strip and the triangle and the Hollywood and all that. And I feel like maybe it's an age thing. Maybe younger women talk about pubes more. But I don't know what the general consensus is with pubes right now.
To be honest, I'm not sure that I do either. It would be lovely if there was like a YouGov pubes tracker each week. Like, what's the state of the nation on pubes?
Yeah.
I would say, as a woman who has sex with men, I've been alarmed by the number of men who don't have pubes in recent years.
Really?
Because I think a penis without any kind of covering is...
They trim it, don't they?
It's trimming, totally. Please do.
Yeah.
But I've seen too many that are just full baldy.
Like waxed.
Like, shaved right down. But what's quite odd, because obviously most men have, like, hair. It's like the inverse of pubes, because it's the only part of their body with no hair on it.
Oh, that's weird.
No, it is.
I don't love that.
And you can't say that to someone when they're naked with you, but I am always a bit taken aback by... It just is a bit cold. Mad. I think there probably are actually statistics about what number of people have pubes and don't, and I feel like clearly what's fashionable is to have no pubes or to have the little moustache one.
Weirdly, I think now the young women, they wax their pubes, but they keep their leg hair long. They're like not arsed about their leg hair.
That's like the men I've dated, clearly, some of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And obviously girls with armpit hair but no pubes.
I just think that's
nuts to us, obviously, but we're old.
Yeah, we don't know anything.
We're old as shit.
I'm old enough to remember, was it Elizabeth Hurley whose pubes were very famously in a magazine shoot? Bursting out of the side of her pants. I feel like
That is ringing a bell.
Yeah, and just famously just like had a full bush just like peeking out of her knickers in a photo shoot, and it was a whole thing at the time. I'm really showing my age, but that's how I mean Elizabeth Hurley clearly has no pubes now and hasn't had them for 20 years.
No, I'd say lasered. I do wonder if the lasered women regret it.
I've had laser.
Have you?
But only on the edges of my pubes.
Oh, that's handy.
I don't regret it. I would regret it if I'd gone for the full area.
Yeah.
Why do ass pubes exist?
Why? Like, evolutionary? Why?
There's an evolutionary reason for front pubes. There is no evolutionary reason for ass pubes. And also, frankly, they are clearly a risk factor.
Yeah. Why?
Why did the body go, I'll just put some there?
Muffling.
Final one.
Okay.
I is the right one to
end on. Oh my god, what is it?
For so many reasons. It's live, laugh, love.
Oh my god! Oh my god, live, laugh, love. They lived, they laughed, they loved.
So we talked about doing a podcast.
We've been talking about this for years.
4 years, about just doing
an expose.
An expose on live, laugh, love. A thing that I find egregious.
Yeah.
Even though I try not to. Whenever I see a live, laugh, love sign, fridge magnet, Facebook profile picture, mm-hmm. it sends a little shudder all through my body.
I think you had a recent experience as well of like an ex who married someone new and you had a little browse offer.
As one does, of course.
And she had a live, laugh, love situation going on.
Massively.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of me that went, I dated someone who's married someone who unironically uses live, laugh, love.
Which means you have to have at least some things in common with that woman.
Yeah.
So, but what?
I think a thing that we've talked about live, laugh, love is it is, I know I'm snobby about it. I feel like I look down on live, laugh, love as a concept.
And I think like live, laugh, love, but also all the other kind of like quotey sort of,
a quote on anything.
Yeah.
Again, in that Prosecco gold
font. Yeah.
It's always there. But the thing that I am still shook by and is one of the greatest pieces of trivia that I think I've ever heard is you, I think you posted on Instagram when we were talking about it one evening.
Yes, I have so many good responses.
You were like, anyone know anything about it? What's the deal with live, laugh, love? And someone pointed out that the origin of live, laugh, love is
Joyce.
James Joyce.
Yeah.
Finnegan's Wake?
I believe
it's Finnegan's Wake. They lived, they laughed, they loved.
He was the original Live, Laugh, Love. Huh?
James Joyce is the originator of Live, Laugh, Love. And someone could have made him like an embroidered scatter cushion with that on. He might have put it in his
room. He might have liked it. And looked at it whilst he was. That was a good day on Instagram when I asked all my followers like what about their reactions to Live, Laugh, Love. My favourite response. Well, there was like loads of girls who was like, do you know what? I have it as a tattoo on my foot. And
oh my God, yes.
As in, they were like, I got it when I was a student. And there was a time when I regretted it. And now I think it's funny. And I think, and I love those girls. And they have a special place in my heart. But there was this one girl who like, she thought it was so funny, the whole live, laugh, love thing. And clearly it was like a private joke. I think she was mostly having with herself. Mm-hmm. But she found it hilarious, which I really relate to.
Oh, yes.
And for her anniversary with her boyfriend, she bought him a spreader bar. Do you know what that is?
Yes, I do.
So for the uninitiated, for those who don't know kink, a spreader bar is like a BDSM sort of fun tool that couples use, and it's like it sort of forces a woman's legs apart. It's like, yeah, very part of that culture. But she bought it for him and she had it engraved with live, laugh, love. Which I think is the funniest thing I have ever heard.
What was his reaction?
His reaction was, he didn't know what the spreader bar was, and he didn't understand the quote, and she had to explain both things, and it was just got completely lost, and he was like, okay.
Surely at that point you just immediately dump them.
I love that woman.
Whoever you are. That
the fact that she is so in her own world in that relationship.
She's
so
just,
funny to me.
She's just like living in her own beautiful world of
things that really amuse her.
Oh my god. I would love someone to write one of those sort of 50 Shades-esque books, which is called Live, Laugh, Love. And it'd just be...
Yeah, spreader bars.
We must, I suppose, before we close, draw a card for Live, Laugh, Love.
Oh my god. What's the future of Live, Laugh, Love?
You must pull this card and you must tell us.
Only I can tell you.
Only you.
The hermit. Live, Laugh, Love is going away for a long rest. A long, long rest. Because it is a holy man.
And
it requires rest.
I do think that the only way to interpret this is that Live, Laugh, Love needs to go and reconnect with its inner self.
You know, man.
We've already said this. James Joyce originated it.
It's like a band that starts touring and it forgets why it started playing music.
It doesn't.
You know?
It needs to go on like a solitary retreat somewhere and like chop wood and be silent and do a lot of yoga and have a word with itself and come back refreshed, renewed and transformed.
And maybe it can make the Prosecco journey, but maybe
I don't think it's going to be. Well, you never know. Maybe they'll go hand in hand. Like, the Hermit is not a card of not being liked. It's not a card of not being... It's not a card of not being loved, of not laughing, of not living. It's a card of introspection. It's a card of self-reflection. It's a card of taking time away from the world to work out what you really mean to yourself.
What does it mean?
And I think I would like to imagine that the power of your podcast is that more people will begin to see the true meaning of live, laugh, love. And not just write it off.
Because I do think nobody ever gets a live, laugh, love tattoo or poster or decal on the wall unless they're in a truly desperate situation.
Completely. And let's be absolutely honest about it. It's not a bad motto.
No!
Live, laugh, love. Those are all really good things.
They're like...
Well, it's a very pure expression of a great way to live.
The thing about the live, laugh, love people is that they are people who like aren't career obsessed. Yeah. The way the idiots like you and I are, who are just like pursuing this end goal that the bar is always moving, and therefore we can never reach true happiness. Like, it's just sweat, toil, expire for us. It's not live, laugh, love.
Weep, loathe, die. It's just...
Yeah, if we could just like live for the weekend a bit more.
Yeah.
Go on nice trips.
If we could just laugh a bit more.
And love. And live.
I think maybe the reason that we get so like ugh about it is because on some...
It reminds us of who we are not.
It reminds us of the things that we probably should be embracing more.
Embrace living and laughing and loving more.
Maybe I'll get a live, laugh, love tattoo.
You hardened career woman. And just, get a tattoo.
Yeah, or a little sign for my house.
Yeah, paint it into the walls.
Secretly, I'll write it underneath everything. Look, I think live, laugh, love... We're gonna reconnect with the true meaning, like the true meaning of Christmas, but it's the true meaning of
live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love.
This podcast is nuts.
It is.
I'm gonna put it out as a bonus, and if people can make it all the way to the end, then God love you.
I've so enjoyed myself.
This has been so great. I'm so drunk. Let's go bother Gav.
Let's go bother Gav and Sil.
You've been Jen County. You have a car. You have a book called Wild Card coming out.
No, it's already out, babe.
It's out.
I have a book called Wild Card. It's out in the world, and it's been sold by any good bookshop, and probably lots of like less good ones too. I don't know.
Yeah. Amazon, not a good one, but they have it.
They certainly.
And it helps when you buy it.
Please, if you're curious about the tarot, if you've enjoyed hearing about the future of Live, Laugh, Love, you know, Wild Card's for you.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. The podcast was produced and edited by me, with mix and music by Harry Harris and artwork by Gavin Day. If you'd like to email me about the pod, you can do so on sentimentalpod@gmail.com or get in touch with me directly on Twitter or Instagram @Zaraline.